Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. I'm in Seattle. Padres play their annual 2-2. Mariners swept them in July at Petco Park. Padres are here the next 2 days. Ryan, there's the Mariners. There's the wild card race that's heating up. There's the rotation. There's Ha-Sung Kim at health. Where would you like to start?
I'd like to start with the wild card race. Padres lost 2-3 to the Giants in a weekend series at Petco Park, tightening up a wild card race in which the New York Mets cannot seem to lose, in which the Diamondbacks continue to play pretty good baseball, and the Atlanta Braves continue to be pretty scary. As it stands today, the Padres are a half game up in the wild card chase for the number one wild card spot. Diamondbacks are a half game behind them. The Mets and Braves, a game and a half behind them. So we've got a tight couple of weeks here to wrap the regular season, don't we?
Four teams within two games of each other, three spots available. So bottom line, worst case scenario for the Padres would be finishing in a tie for the third wild card spot, the final playoff spot with the Mets, because the Mets hold the tiebreaker over them. Padres hold the tiebreaker over the Braves. Padres and Diamondbacks have split 10 games and play each other the final series of the season. So that could be huge. It's amazing, man. The Padres have the best record in the major leagues since the All-Star break. They have the best record in the major leagues since June 19th. But all those other teams, except the Braves were actually had one of the best records in the major leagues, like to that point, and they have been barely over 500 since the All-Star break. But the Mets, the Diamondbacks, right there with them. The Diamondbacks have the second best record since the All-Star break. The Dodgers, the third best, and the Mets, the fourth best. 31-15. Three other teams in the major leagues this year have had stretches that good. The Padres, but they were 37-40 on June 19th. They're 44-24 since then. Okay, great. That's great. You were three games under on June 19th. The beginning of the season matters as well. I don't know, Ryan, what do you think? Two games enough?
I think so. And again, like we talk about on this show all the time, you know, every day that passes is a day in which the Padres get that much closer to making the playoffs. The thing that scares me a little bit is the Mets. Okay. The Mets have won 9 of their last 10.
Right.
During that time, the Padres have gone 5-5. So have the Braves, and the Mets and the Diamondbacks have gone 4-6.
Yep.
While everybody else seems to be maybe backsliding just a little bit, here come the New York Mets. And to me, that's just going to be a fascinating second storyline as we come down the stretch. As you know, during the stretch run, you tend to play divisional teams. The Padres will play the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks here in the final week of the season. And the Mets and Braves will play each other at some point, too.
And the Mets and Braves play each other. Now, listen, as the Padres have proved, it doesn't matter who you're playing if you're playing really well, if you're one of those teams, right? But the Mets close Phillies, Braves, Phillies, Brewers. So that's 12 games that are against, you know, other playoff team. Two teams definitely in the playoffs and, you know, the other team that you're battling against. So now Padres close Diamondbacks or Dodgers Diamondbacks. They also have Houston next week. They also have, of course, the historically bad White Sox next week at home. This is what it is all about. I know Padres fans would love to be in the situation, right? Like that the Dodgers are. Of course you would. Of course. But this is what it's all about. This is fun.
Right. I seem to remember a year ago, there was a certain team that had been underperforming all year that got really hot in September too. And, you know, the Padres at the end of September essentially ran out of days on the calendar. And I think that if you're the Padres, that's what you hope sort of happens with the Mets here, right? The Mets haven't lost much in the last 2 weeks. You hope that it's just a little too much to overcome by the time the clock runs out on this season, which is, if I recall correctly, 2 weeks from this upcoming Sunday.
You need to have
20 days.
Right. It's interesting that you went that way. I like to see how people think. As opposed to 3 weeks from yesterday,
right?
You went with 2 weeks from six days from now. That's interesting. Right. But yes, both are accurate. The Mets began their run a little bit sooner than the Padres began theirs last year, right? Mm-hmm. And weren't as bad. Here's the crazy thing. 84 wins got you in last year. You're not even sure 90's getting you in this year.
Yeah.
I bet you it does. It's hard to believe 90 wins don't get you in. But so 90 wins, by the way, for the Padres, who have 17 games remaining. I believe all three of those other teams have 19 games remaining. what that is the Padres would have to win 9 more games. So go 9-8 to get to 90 wins. That's really shouldn't be that hard, right? Like, I mean, but man, it's there's a lot of factors.
Well, and if you beat the teams you're supposed to beat, yeah, that gets the Padres pretty close, right? Starting with this week's 2-game set against the Mariners, they then, you know, at some point will play the White Sox. You know, if you say you go 5-0 there, yeah, it's academic the rest of the way, right? You just got to go 2-whatever, 3-whatever. So yeah, it's easier said than done, you know.
So here it is with the Mariners. Mariners are 4.5 back in the West, behind the Astros, 3.5 back in the American League wild card. Mm-hmm. I've heard a lot of talk like, oh, that's a done deal. I'm assuming the Mariners don't think so. They're 83-71. They've been highly disappointing. They fired their manager. They have some injuries, but look, you're facing. Luckily, they get the Padres get to avoid Logan Gilbert, who owns them. But they're facing George Kirby and Brian Wu. Those are two really good pitchers. The Padres have lost what, 3 in a row in Seattle, and have lost 8 of 10. 8 of their past 10 against the Mariners. This has not been a friendly place to them.
No, it hasn't. Let's talk about the Padres' rotation plans a little bit. Yes. They really benefited by, you know, they skipped Michael King once. He comes back and certainly looked as good as he's looked, I think, all year the other night. What do the Padres plan to do down the stretch here?
So Darvish and then King. So it's interesting, right? Like they gave him the 8 days. He's at 156 and 2/3 innings, blown past everything. He's thrown 100-plus pitches, or it was 100 and then 103. First time in his career, he's gone back-to-back 100. And now he's pitching on 4 days rest. So If you want evidence that they feel good about where Michael King is at, what the metrics are telling them about his strength, about his arm slot, his spin, his velocity, the movement on his pitches, what he's telling them, what the results are, Michael King's fine. He goes against Brian Wu on Tuesday, as we tape this on Mondays, George Kirby against Yu Darvish. Yu Darvish, 2 2/3 innings, gave up one run in each of the 3 innings that he began in his last start, which is his first one off of the technically injured list, but, you know, injured list, restricted list. And then look, they're off Thursday, they're off the following Thursday, and then they're off the Monday after that. They can set this up almost however they want. I mean, conceivably, I'm assuming Joe Musgrove, who got rocked yesterday, one of the weirdest things you'll ever see, is going to start in San Francisco this weekend. However, heck, they could even maneuver it so that he doesn't have to do that. Bring Yu Darvish back on 4 days. Give Joe an extra rest. I don't think they'll do that. That sounds a little drastic. But look, then you've got the last week of the season where you face the Dodgers Tuesday through Thursday. You face the Diamondbacks Friday through Sunday. Whoever pitches on Tuesday in LA can pitch on Sunday in Arizona. So you've got the ability, whoever's hot, whoever you feel the matchups are good, then you can do whatever you want with your rotation.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Or look at this. They go on an incredible hot streak and they're locked into a wild card spot and they decide how they want to line up their rotation, not just based on the regular season, but who they want pitching games 1 and 2 in the wild card series. So there's lots they can do.
Sure. There is. What did we make of Darvish's first start back? The numbers weren't good. Is it one of those things where we just take it as, hey, it was his first start back, or any cause for concern long-term there?
Somewhere in the middle, but closer to the first option, which was, hey, first start back, right? Like Joe Musgrove had a long runway and a more of a traditional, right?
Right.
Return. You Darvish was like, I don't know if unprecedented, but like, that was crazy.
Yeah.
Like out of contact, basically, for all intents and purposes, for a couple months, and then comes back, throws some hardcore bullpens, faces some teammates on the mound at Petco, goes and faces minor leaguers in a controlled scrimmage, comes back and pitches. That probably was about what we could expect. That said, he didn't prove anything.
Right.
Pitches looked good at times. They really did. And he's Yu Darvish. So you got to have faith. But he didn't prove anything. So we're still waiting.
Yeah, you and I talk about Darvish a lot on here in that he's so unique among Padres starters. You almost sort of have to throw out the rule book. What would normally apply to a regular starting pitcher coming back, Yu Darvish is sort of on his own plan. And I mean that as a compliment, right? You don't treat him the same way you treat others. Yes.
I didn't hear anything after you said unique, because I never even thought of that before. We all make, you can't help yourself, but when you're talking about you and you say, hey, is you pitching tomorrow? No, I'm not pitching tomorrow. Ha, ha, ha. Right. But anyway, sorry, Ryan. I'm sorry. I really am. Yes, I did hear you, and everything you said is true. And that's why you have to have faith in you, Darvish. Maybe like you might be a little more worried about someone else. That said, you know, while he was gone, he turned 38.
Right.
So, I mean, there's going to come a point, right? But look, the velocity was fine. Like I said, the pitches looked good. He didn't have put away stuff. He wasn't quite as sharp. Really, maybe not nearly as sharp as like on fire, you Darvish. Mm-hmm. So, but I mean, it makes tomorrow even more fascinating.
It sure does. And I mean, there's still so many questions. You know, this is a Padres team that again appears headed to a playoff spot. A Padres team that is, you know, among the best in baseball since the All-Star break. There are still questions. This is a team right now that doesn't have a shortstop. And I think that that's where I'd like to go sort of for our next topic here. Xander Bogaerts appears to be open to playing shortstop if it means that Donovan Solano can get more at-bats as a first baseman with Jake Cronenworth moving over to second.
Right.
This is a fraught topic that involves lots of moving parts. Explain to me, Kevin, why now and what this might look like the rest of the season.
I want to start with like the base of Xander Bogaerts made a move from his lifelong position. Like he says he doesn't recall as a kid playing second base. So he makes this move in spring training, works really hard, doesn't look great. He's kind of hurting himself, beating himself up. The body movements are different, right? He's having to deal with that while struggling at the plate. Works his way into being a pretty decent to slash darn good second baseman. There, I want to set that as the baseline, and that it is harder than we think to make that move from one side to the other, and especially from shortstop to second base. It's about how you attack the ball, how you receive throws, how you do the relays. Just there is more that goes into it than, hey, when we were in Little League and you're playing the middle infield, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. And especially for some players, all right? Mm-hmm. So that's the base. This guy, he has never been asked to move back to shortstop, mm-hmm. but he's been talked to about it, and he's a very good teammate, and he's aware of all of the ramifications. Right? Who would move where? Who doesn't get playing time? He believes he serves the team better and, yes, himself better as a second baseman at this point, mm-hmm. or has. Now he's looking at, no offense, Mason McCoy, but Donovan Solano is not playing as much. Donovan Solano had like an 800 OPS when he was playing, mm-hmm. and doesn't have that now. And he's thinking to himself, with help from the team talking to him, about, hey, here's what we could do. Hey, man, up to you, but here's what we could do. Mm-hmm. Wow. Wouldn't it be great to get that version of Donovan Solano back in the lineup every day? Mm-hmm. Or he didn't say this, but you have to think, okay, also maybe David Peralta as a DH, right? Mm-hmm. If then Luis Arraez moves into the lineup and whatever, however you're going to do it, but it's primarily Donovan Solano, that there you go. Like, mm-hmm. that might be the best version if Ha-Sung Kim, who doesn't look close to ready. Mm-hmm. And yesterday, Mike Shildt, who doesn't acknowledge much, said as much, that wasn't a setback on Saturday. They expected him, bottom line, to be, or not expected, hoped that he would be further along at this point.
Right. He referred to yesterday as, quote, kind of a hit the wall a little bit and a little bit of a reset. When it comes to Ha-Sung Kim. Now, I don't speak Mike Shildt, but you do better than anybody. That means there's no expectation that Ha-Sung Kim's going to be back anytime soon, don't you think?
Yes. Like that is like Mike doesn't give breadcrumbs much, right?
Right.
So then when he does, that generally is bigger than just some offhanded comment. Right. And I think, I don't even think that was an offhanded comment. I mean, Mike also is very measured. Mm-hmm. So, like, it was obvious. There were those of us who were asking about it, and it was time to address it. Look, they were thinking he could not do the IL. Then they were thinking that maybe it wouldn't be much longer than the 10 days. And now we are where? It was August 18th that he jammed his shoulder again, and it's September 9th now. So time to address it, time to talk about it. So I had heard, I had left the ballpark Saturday before Ha-Sung threw. I had heard it didn't go well.
Right.
And that there was many discussions about it afterward. So this was on my agenda to talk to people about. And then Mike, you know, saved me a little time by just talking about it.
Is there any chance that Kim could return as a second baseman? If the throw across the diamond is the problem.
That's interesting. The throws I've seen, no.
Okay.
There's zero zip whatsoever.
Okay. Okay.
So I don't know what it is. It's something that's been there and was aggravated, obviously made worse. We need to, at some point here, need, you know, those of us, the fans, the media is the conduit to the fans. We will find out at some point. We think we need to find out at some point what the diagnosis on Ha-Sung Kim is.
Sure. Well, we've become experts in shoulder subluxations thanks to Fernando Tatis Jr., right? And we know in general that the more you do it, the worse they get. Speaking generally.
Yeah, though I don't know what this is. That's what I want to say. Obviously, this has not been a Tatis situation.
No.
Like in terms of the severity, right, or maybe even the injury itself, the specific injury, but there are definitely the similarity of, okay, the shoulder and he's trying and it's not working. And okay, now it's throwing, not hitting.
Right.
And it's the throwing shoulder versus the other shoulder.
Right. Versus the back shoulder. Right. Yeah.
But yes, it's, there's something there that's bigger than, oh, he jammed his shoulder. Now he jammed his shoulder on August 18th, which aggravated whatever was the matter with his shoulder.
Right. Right. And again, they wouldn't be putting Xander Bogaerts at shortstop in the middle of a game like they did yesterday and shuffling more guys around the diamond if they didn't think that this was a very real possibility, that this is what the team's going to have to look like for a while. Right.
And moreover, that is correct. And moreover, they wouldn't be talking about moving him there if this was going to be, oh yeah, Ha-Sung's back on Friday.
Sure. Xander Bogaerts comes off as a really good teammate. You and I were talking off camera earlier today. I was like, you know, that's one of the best, like his whole speech there about Solano, like that's good teammate stuff right there. Is there a part of him that is like, oh, now you want me back at shortstop? Is there any of that or no?
I couldn't presume to know that. Right. Look, the guy didn't want to change to shortstop. Right. I don't think he made really any, he didn't make a big deal about it. He wasn't by any means like a jerk about that, right, but I don't think he hid that fact that he didn't want to change, but he did.
Right.
And then he worked really hard at it, and it was hard. It was difficult. Mm-hmm. And so you could extrapolate that, but I don't know.
Right.
I think you are 100% accurate that he's a good teammate, that he does think about things. And it was an interesting situation yesterday when talking to him about it. He was very measured in his words. Mm-hmm. And I love this about Xander, too. He's so real and contemplative that he went right to, he didn't like give any context to why he was talking about Donovan Solano.
Right.
He just went right into it as, you know, because we, you know, those of us who follow the team, we're going to know, but like, that was his thought process is like, he didn't really even answer the questions he was asked. He just went right into the reason behind why the question would be considered. And I just thought that was awesome.
Yeah. And again, I think that if the playoffs were to start tomorrow, the best Padres team, you know, 1 through 9 has Donovan Solano in the lineup somewhere, probably.
Yes. And give Donovan Solano some more at bats. I mean, he's batting like 167 in the last month, but that's like, you know, 35 at bats or something.
Right.
Like, I mean, you know, if he was starting virtually every day for 2 months,
right,
be it at third, DH, first base, Donovan Solano coming up with big hits, Donovan Solano getting on base twice a game, Donovan Solano always working you 6, 7, 9 pitches. And that's the balance when you've got a good team, man. Mm-hmm. That's the balance. Like David Peralta going to probably go through a little here, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, hopefully for David Peralta and the Padres, like he continues to go up and have these quality at bats. He had a good one yesterday, worked a walk. But like these guys, look, they can be really good off the bench. Mm-hmm. They're generally better playing every day.
Right. Right. What do you make of Tatis so far in his return? How close is he to being the Fernando Tatis we all remember?
Have you noticed it on TV?
Yes. That's why I'm asking.
It's there.
Yes.
It's there. Mainly when he slows down, like when he's decelerating. I will throw this out. I don't know if we talked about it. You can tell it when he's running because, like, from the way when I was talking to him, it was like he went first to third. And from first to second and a half, man, that was old Tatis.
Yeah.
Then slowing down, oh, that's not him. When he chases a ball in the corner and he almost throws the guy out, he takes four or five steps to slow down when it would have taken him two before. That was the difference between that guy being safe and out.
Right.
He would have been out on April 1st.
Right.
And he's not out now. Now, a slower guy maybe or a different play, you still want Tatis in there as long as you have judged and they have that you're not doing long-term damage. You're not risking anything. You want, I don't know if it, he says it's 95. I don't know if it's 85%. I don't know if it's 90. I don't know if it's 95, but you want whatever percentage of Tatis in the game.
Yeah. No. Oh yeah. And you'd rather have Tatis at 80%, let's say, than no offense to David Peralta, than whatever else you could possibly run out there. I think.
I have never, I don't think, loved a player and human being like I love David Peralta in such a short time. He joined the team on May 22nd. Mm-hmm. He is a wonderful human being. He went from days away from being cut to an like imperative on this team. I just love the whole package.
Yes.
He's an adventure on every routine fly ball.
Yeah. Yep.
So yes, amen to what you said there.
Yes, absolutely. Hey, Kevin, I always put you on the spot before we leave here. And this is, by the way, talk about a good road trip week for you. You go Seattle, ooh, San Francisco.
With a day off today and a day off Thursday.
That's
perfect. I think what they did, what MLB did when they went to a much lighter September schedule, it was four beat writers who, A, were covering a team with all sorts of drama, and you had to, like, catch up and do work outside of the field to, like, get your stories ready for the implosion, or guys covering playoff teams, so you've got to get work done away from the day-to-day grind on, you know, the playoffs and all that. So I really appreciate that, MLB. I know it didn't have anything to do with collective bargaining and the players getting more days off in September. It was to help out the beat writers, so thank you very much.
My question for you, Seattle or San Francisco?
This is the Doom Loop trip. I know that's going to get me in trouble. I defend these cities so much. And then there's a point where you come to it and you go, man, this downtown has gone to hell.
Okay.
They're rough, dude. They are such beautiful cities. Now, I would never say that about your old town of Tucson. I would never say, wow, Tucson's really gone to hell. Because guess what? I never had it as heaven. I never had it. I never had any expectations of it. I don't go to Stillwater and go, wow, this place is dusty. Because it was always dusty. Seattle and San Francisco are beautiful, beautiful cities with neat, eclectic neighborhoods and eclectic people. And it's just gotten freaking wild, man. It's sad. I'm sorry to have gone there. I didn't mean to, but I did, Ryan. I will take Seattle over San Francisco. That is my answer. It is stunning, stunning views. The Bay or whatever it's called, the Sound is beautiful. What about you? You did a lot of those cities. Oh, yeah. You were covering the pack. It was what, the Pac-10 when you were covering it? Or did you cover it? You probably took it from Pac-8 to Pac-12, didn't you?
10 to 12. I covered them when they were 10 and 12. To me, it was always Seattle, but I was always going there like early October before it got crazy cold. And so I understood that Seattle in July is amazing. Seattle in early October is pretty great. Seattle in December, not so much.
True, true, true. I made when I did national college football for 3 years, fortunately for me, Pac-10, it went to 12. Very important in San Diego, right? And Washington was good. Mm-hmm. And New Heisel was a great quote.
Oh, the best.
I made every excuse I could to get up to Washington to cover the Huskies in September and October. Freaking amazing weather. Mm-hmm. A little cold. Stadium, just how about that stadium? That press box just rocking.
It's amazing.
View of all the yachts out there outside of, I mean, yeah. And they love their Huskies, especially when they're doing well.
Especially when they're doing well. Yeah.
That was pre-Seahawks doing really well. This was a Husky town.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're sort of everybody's first love there, I think. I'm even predating the Mariners, you know. So, yeah, it's I like Seattle. I'll take Seattle there, too.
I want to say this, Ryan. I want to say this. Since I started out being a real jerk about it and being getting all, you know, I love San Francisco, man. It is so beautiful. I look forward to my walks to and from the ballpark there. And I just defy everyone telling you, you shouldn't be walking downtown San Francisco. I love San Francisco. And I pushed back for years on the narrative. Mm-hmm. Guess what? Some narratives are true.
The narrative's starting to win out. Yeah. Yep. But then you get Phoenix. Phoenix in 2 weeks. Phoenix in, is it Houston there? It's at Houston.
Houston is at home.
I forget.
Houston is at home.
Oh, it's at home. No, never mind. Dang.
Houston, Chicago next week, and then LA, which, man, they broke a record yesterday. So I'm hoping, you know, September and October in Southern California just becomes so miserable.
So hot.
It's like summer starting later and it goes later. It's 103 at Dodger Stadium yesterday, and I would not be surprised if we're still playing in some serious heat there in the end of September when we're there. And then of course, it's indoors, but that 5-minute walk to the ballpark in September in Phoenix is pretty warm.
Pretty warm.
And you go through all the bars that have, every bar has their misters going from 11 a.m. It's like this public service, and they got these misters going, and it's so hot, the cement below the misters isn't even wet because like the ground is dried.
You always walk past it. You sort of lean into the mister a little bit. Try to get just a little mist on your face. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've been there. Fantastic. All right. Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. Padres Mariners 2-game series starting tomorrow in Seattle. The quote unquote natural rivalry between the Padres and Mariners, which hasn't been much of one ever. So we'll see if this changes things. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.